You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, and Henry Paulson are going to be testifying before Congress, and they'll be talking about the $700 billion bailout that is before Capitol Hill right now. We were asking you for your most convincing voice in asking for $700 billion by, say, Thursday, 877-8-MY-TAKE. Nathan in Woburn, Massachusetts, sent us an email. Hello, America. I need you to give me $700 billion because my dog ate my mortgage. That works for you? Give us a call, 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
Okay, we're going to switch gears here and talk about the U.S. Armed Forces. Between the active members and reservists, there's somewhere around 2.3 million Americans who are serving, many of them serving overseas now as we are fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. So who is in this fighting force? Joining us right now is Freakonomics co-author Stephen Dubner.
Ooh, Freakonomics.
There you
You're
go.
You're a good dancer. You're a good dancer, Dora. I've
Freak
never seen
out.
That.
Yes. Well, we like
Stop.
We like your anthem. So, Stephen, what do you got for us? Break this down. Who was in the armed forces?
Well, this was a surprise to me. It may not be a surprise to other people.
Well, what motivated you to even take a look
well,
at this?
Well, a few things. Yeah. Personal, political, and datical, if datical is a word. It's fun to look at data.
I'll look it up.
To look at data when you see it. So the personal was the fact that I looked around and I find that a lot of the people who are going into the military in the last year that I know are people from middle and upper middle class families. So a nephew of mine who's from a solidly middle class family decided to join the daughter of a friend of mine who runs a law firm. This is the youngest of three children. The older one's an engineer. The other's in finance, although maybe not for long. And the third one became an ROTC officer. And I thought, you know, and then we watched the political conventions.
Right.
Bo Biden's speech got a lot of attention for a lot of reasons, which gets you to thinking, well,
he's going off to Iraq.
Right. He's going off to Iraq.
Joe Biden's son.
How valuable is it that for the Democratic ticket that the VP candidate has a son who's about to go off to Iraq, albeit as an older guy who's not going to be in combat? Then we see, of course, that Sarah Palin, the Republican VP candidate, has a young son who's going off to Iraq. How anomalous is this, I wondered. And so you go and look at the numbers and you find
that— Anomalous in the sense that these kinds of families from this socioeconomic group have members in the military.
The articles that I read, mm-hmm. the TV news reports that I see tend to reinforce the image that our armed forces are full of low-income soldiers who have very little option in life other than the military.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the data, now the data that I'm looking at, and this raises skepticism among a lot of people, comes from a Heritage Foundation report by the group called the Center for Data Analysis out of the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation does not have the best record for presenting clear-eyed, non-ideological data. And yet, and I have some qualms with this report. It's a new report, and it's easy to slice and dice data to make the argument that you want. But that said, the armed forces right now, as they now exist, are The personnel in the armed forces are better educated and from much higher income families than we think. The top 40% of the household income families in the U.S. produce more than 50% of our armed services. Okay,
so it's more like the Napoleonic era where you have a sort of warrior class.
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way because you have to look at the reason that people are joining. They're joining for educational opportunities. They're joining for travel opportunities. Some are joining because it is the one and only option. But the conception that the military is staffed largely by the bottom of the barrel, that's really the unspoken charge that's usually levied, is entirely wrong, both in terms of education and income. Now, you could also say, well, wait a minute, low income and low education go together. And this Heritage Foundation boasts that more than 90% of Army recruits have a high school diploma. In fact, well more than 90%, although there's a lot of controversy over that one point, I should add. But that's a little bit of a false boast it's a requirement for joining the Army.
But isn't your premise more generational, perhaps? Couldn't you argue that that would have been the case, say, in the 70s as opposed to today? Because when you do look at the images, and I've certainly done my share of stories, not only on the ground in Iraq and other places, but also of soldiers here in the United States, and over this past 7 years, we really see a large variety of people, from the reservists who are in their 40s and private business owners, all the way down to the 18-year-old who comes from small-town USA. So aren't we seeing those images of a very varied armed forces?
I don't know. I think it's hard to say who the we is when you say, aren't we seeing the images? I think if you...
stories that the media is doing, both in print, on television, on the
radio. Let me say this.
I
think if you depend largely on media images, and by media I would include film as well, I think the perception is not that. I think the perception is that the military now... Look, I mean, you know, you read about the backdoor draft. You read about all the different instances in which military personnel are kind of Shanghaied or press ganged into service. And you would assume that these are people with very few options. This report makes it clear that there are options for these people.
But what
this
about
report,
when we...
Just 1 second, though. This report doesn't deal with the reserve. It deals mostly with the enlistees, right?
Reserve
is a slightly different issue.
Reserve is different. It actually deals with enlistees and officers.
Right.
The officer corps is an entirely different story.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you can expect, that does come from a higher income household. Yeah.
Because the flip side of this also, or I should say another issue about this, is that the armed forces are the most integrated unit out of any corporation or organization in the United States of America.
True.
And so we definitely see that picture.
It's true.
A very diverse group.
And look, I don't want to be a military apologist, but I will tell you this, from working for several years at the New York Times and still having an affiliation there, and having spent some time at West Point on a variety of kind of research projects and knowing people from a variety of military segments, I'm always shocked at the degree to which there is, if not an active ignorance, a kind of casual ignorance of the way the military functions and what it represents within the media, okay? And I've always thought, you know, for an institution, the New York Times, it lies just down the river from West Point, which is a very interesting institution, which has a lot of interesting philosophies, a lot of interesting accomplishments. I wish that people would look at military service and the statistics behind it a little more calmly and deeply.
So very interesting.
That's
Stephen
what this blog
Dubner,
is about. Yeah.
Stephen Dubner is going to hang with us for a little while.
Just one, can I ask Stephen just one tiny little thing? Stephen, can you ask me for $700 billion quickly?
John, if you don't give me $700 billion, I'm going to kill every puppy in America.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
My.
That was convincing.
So violent.
And then I'm going to Canada.
All right. That's enough.
On that note, we're going to go to Femi Oke, who's got some headlines of the day for us.
That would work. I can actually hear the money flying in right now.